Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. We're bringing you a special edition of the show this week from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting annual convention in Kansas City. Hundreds of ag industry leaders gathered to share the latest updates on issues important to farm country, like biofuels, trade, and conservation. The Agriculture Department is preparing to roll out the second stage of the Supplemental Disaster Relief Program. We asked Richard Fordyce, Undersecretary of Agriculture for Farm Production and Conservation, about how USDA is planning to roll out the program.
The SDRP Stage 2 announcement that happened on Monday is kind of the final piece of that American Relief Act money that, you know, that Congress appropriated, the total of $30 billion. At the beginning was that economic relief, the $10 billion. And then we had SDRP Stage 1, and now this SDRP Stage 2. So once we're finished with SDRP Stage 2, you know, we should be able to have been able to get that relief out, that $30 billion relief out to farmers across the country. So I think it's been a while ago, long enough ago, that folks maybe don't remember, you know, what the SDRP 2 funding was. But you ask about SDRP 2. And that is an approach that will support agriculture, support farmers that were uninsured. Also, for the first time, a disaster program that is attempting to capture shallow losses. And so shallow losses are, you know, situations for crops that they weren't very good, but they didn't hit that level of indemnity. So when they did not get an indemnity, but they were very close. And so in this program, we've got formulas that will be able to calculate how close were you to getting an indemnity and potentially be able to make a payment that's equal to your insurance premiums and some other fees. So it's going to be a help for folks that that didn't get an indemnity. The big piece of it, though, are the folks that were not insured. And so we really feel pretty strongly that that's going to be a pretty high percentage of the folks that will be able to engage in this program will be specialty crop producers that either insurance products aren't available or they just don't work well for them. And so that uninsured kind of population of growers are the ones that is really going to be targeted in SDRP Stage 2.
This is rolling out right after the government shutdown. Government's now reopened, but the longest government shutdown in the country's history. You know, many USDA staff were furloughed during that shutdown. Well, those staff not working for those 30-some days impact FPAC's ability to roll out this aid and roll it out quickly.
You know, so the final pieces of the implementation of SDRP 2, we were actually doing that during the shutdown. We had folks that were exempt from being furloughed in order to kind of finish putting the development of the program, you know, getting the regulation through, clearance, and doing all the things that you have to do to be able to roll out a program. So from a headquarters perspective at FSA, those folks were continuing to work through the shutdown. Shutdown ends. Our goal was to be able to announce it at the end of the shutdown, and we were able to meet that goal. And so since we had a lot of folks furloughed, we didn't have the ability to, for example, train county office people on how to implement SDRP 2. So we're taking this week 2 hours a day, every day, all week, to train them on different components of SDRP 2. And so by Friday, county office staff, state office folks that support the county offices will be trained. And then we'll start talking about and taking applications for SDRP 2 on Monday.
Very good. The other program that farmers have kind of been waiting on, the administration has teased, is some type of market facilitation program to compensate producers for trade-related losses. I mean, when could they expect that? Could that possibly be before the end of the calendar year?
So those conversations, Lydia, are ongoing. You know, I think that, you know, if we do something, when we do something, we want it to be reflective of what's actually happening in the marketplace. What is that effect on trade, and how is that affecting prices? You know, the president was able to secure some agreements with China on some purchases. Since that time, you know, we've seen an uptick in soybean prices, you know, up to at one point $1.30 more than before the announcements were made. And so taking all of, I mean, there is a lot that has to go into that discussion and that calculation. But we want to just make sure that we are being as representative as possible when and if there is a program. You know, the chief economist's office is key to being able to, you know, gather that data, analyze that data, you know, and present a real real-time picture about where we are. So those conversations are continuing.
Okay. So with this waiting and seeing, you know, it could be beyond 2025. There's no rush to get this out very, very quickly.
Right. I think, you know, I think certainly, you know, the White House, the administration, the president, Secretary Rollins, we all realize that, you know, economically times are a little tough, you know, in agriculture right now, you know, especially like Title I commodity farmers. You know, it's just kind of a tough time. And there's a whole bunch of things that kind of are playing into that, right? Commodity prices are one piece of that, but input costs on the other side, you know, can be, can certainly be a problem when it comes to the margin between what it costs to plant a crop and after harvest, what you got, you know, in the bin. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot that goes into this.
Certainly a lot of moving pieces.
There are a lot of moving pieces.
Congress also recently extended the Farm Bill for another year. I mean, what impact does that have on the Conservation Reserve Program?
So Conservation Reserve Program, one of those, you know, I remember when CRP started, and now I'm going to call it a legacy program. But, you know, certainly a key piece to conservation across the landscape, you know, in rural America. So CRP payments started, I think, yesterday or today, going out for this year. There's more than one payment run, depending on what the contract is, what kind of CRP contract it is. Those are bunched in different payment runs, but the first payment run I think started yesterday or maybe today. So, you know, we're getting that rolled out. You know, one of the things that that has complicated just about everything that we do is that the government shutdown started on what would have been the first day of the new fiscal year. And so we've got, and I don't even know how many, but we've got a number of systems that at the start of each fiscal year need to be audited. They need to be, you know, checked. And that work is kind of done before any kind of payment runs or any kind of program involvement happens. So really Thursday in a lot of cases was like the beginning of our fiscal year, because that work that needed to be done was done by folks that were furloughed.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. The country's longest recorded government shutdown is now over. We asked Joby Young, Executive Vice President at the American Farm Bureau Federation, what's at stake for agriculture in the deal lawmakers struck to reopen the government?
Yeah, well, the main thing obviously is the extension of the Farm Bill, those programs that weren't covered under the One Big Beautiful Bill. So we're encouraged to see that those get included. Of course, you know, we still need to update the Farm Bill. Those programs that the One Big Beautiful Bill didn't cover, there's a lot of needed updates with loan limits and conservation programs and rural development and other things. We still need to work on that, and we'll continue to advocate for that too. But it is good to know that those programs are extended now, and we can move forward with all these other priorities we have that are still bearing down on us.
One of the things the government shutdown delayed, the administration has teased, you know, some kind of market relief payments coming. I mean, farmers seem to be counting on that economic assistance payments with the condition of farm country right now and looking ahead to planting. You know, how much money do you think that farmers might need, and how much do you expect the administration to possibly provide?
Yeah, well, I don't have a hard and fast number. We know it's many billions of dollars, you know, out there for various industries throughout ag. There's a lot of challenges in agriculture right now, and we're seeing balance sheets across the country upside down. And so there are, estimates are pretty high, and that's why we've been advocating for these bridge payments. You know, the two lanes, of course, the sort of the trade lane that the USDA is working on. We saw some comments from the secretary, I think yesterday, about some timing on that, maybe in the next few weeks, next month. You know, some more news about those payments, and we're advocating for those. But then, of course, the other piece, the other lane, which is, you know, just that reflects the losses that are coming from the general farm economy we've seen, you know, four straight years of declining commodity prices and high input costs, and how that's really reflecting out in the farm economy. So that's something that's sorely needed right now across farm country. But of course, that's just a bridge until we can get to some of these improvements we've seen in our farm programs from the One Big Beautiful Bill that don't kick in until next year. And so that'll be great to make it to that point, but we need to make it to that point first.
Yeah, and Farm Bureau was recently at the White House advocating for year-round E15. It's a big priority of farmers. You know, what was the sentiment from that meeting, and was the administration perceptive?
Well, we're really encouraged about where we are on E15. Of course, we're not in the end zone yet, but we're about as close as we've ever been, at least since I've been working on these issues, which have been for a number of years. And so we're kind of right at the end zone, and we're trying to push it through every way we can. And so there's a lot of conversations in the White House complex going on. We were part of that and encouraged by folks trying to find a path forward, find agreement on what that looks like. But that would be huge.
And as we look ahead to Thanksgiving, Americans are set to spend less on this year's Thanksgiving dinner. You know, what did the American Farm Bureau Federation find in your annual survey, and how do those costs vary from previous years?
Yeah, sure. So we've been doing this survey for 40 years. And so it's a pretty interesting project to have for 40 years, volunteer shoppers fanning out across the country and helping us with this informal survey. It is a snapshot in time, you know, and prices, of course, they change as you go through the holiday season, and retailers put specials on and those sorts of things. But what we did see this time when we do it the first week in November was a overall 5% decline, and that's primarily driven by turkeys and the specials that retailers are putting on frozen turkeys to bring shoppers in the door, and so that drove a lot of those savings. It's some other parts of our market basket are up, some down, but overall 5% decline. So shoppers, I'm sure, will be happy to see that, and if they wait till maybe a little closer to Thanksgiving for their shopping, they might even get a better deal out there.
I'll be back with more from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention right after this.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Join us as we celebrate three decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions. Connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
Welcome back. President Trump is moving ahead with a trade deal with China. We asked U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO Dan Hallstrom what the impact of the deal is for U.S. meat exports.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. And yes, the China topic's a big one. And I think the recent call it a thaw in relations is a very good first step. But the reality is that, especially on the beef side, we still have some formidable challenges. And we have a de facto ban at the moment, mainly because of the fact that the CIFR, which is their plant registration system, has not been updated with more than 400 U.S. beef establishments. So this is our single largest priority, to get those establishments relisted on the China CIFR system. But it really doesn't stop there. In addition to that, we also have quite a few non-tariff trade issues coming up with various residue violations. So there's quite a few plants that have actually been delisted twice. So you have the plant registration, but then you have these non-tariff trade issues as well. So those two items, I mean, $1.6 billion market last year for U.S. beef, one of our fastest growing regions. So without a doubt, whether it's with USTR or USDA, this is the single largest priority to get these plants relisted.
And some of those beef facility export registrations are expired, and it's possible to renew those in the China deal. You know, what's the importance of renewing those?
Well, I think, you know, it's not, you know, $1.6 billion was our fastest growing market, but really there's additional reasons. I mean, the halo effect to having China in the market versus out on beef it can't be understated, because, the reality is that the competition for product is common throughout Asia. The product mix is very similar. So by having China in the market versus out, you're going to raise all boats in terms of the value opportunity. So I think that, and they're demanding our product. I mean, the largest single customer for U.S. beef is Sam's Club, the very high-end, modern retailer with 50-some stores throughout the Eastern Seaboard, right? And they're ready to go back into U.S. beef. I mean, they've had to defer to other sources like Australia, and their business has been down significantly. So it's not like, the consumer side's entirely different than the political side. They want our product. They want the value. They want the quality. So yeah, we're, like I said, this is a primary focus.
And China is just one country, one example, but President Trump's tariffs have rippled through many U.S. trading partners. How have exporters in the U.S. responded to these tariffs, and what questions, concerns have they been bringing to you throughout this whole year?
Yeah, I think that it's been volatile. A lot of information, a lot of changes, a lot of shifts. But I think if you kind of sift through all the noise, the bottom line is that demand is still very, very good. In fact, record-breaking in some of these countries. And keep in mind, on the beef side, that's with an extremely high price level, right? I mean, we hit a record choice cutout last summer. I think it was in July, where we hit almost $420 a hundredweight on choice, all-time record. And even with that, some of these markets, like a Mexico, like a Central America, like a Colombia, are still buying our products. That wasn't the case 5-10 years ago. You know, when prices hit a certain point, they'd stop, and then they'd come back in when the prices came down. So I think there's a real optimism amongst exporters that, the middle class is emerging globally, and this is what we're seeing. Of course, nobody likes high prices, but that doesn't mean they're not going to buy our product. They want the product, they want the quality. So I think that's the positive.
And these tariffs on some of the U.S.'s closest trading partners, are you concerned about the relationships with those trading partners changing in the future?
Well, yeah, on the surface, yes, but deep down, no. I think a lot of these partnerships, have been established over decades. I look at USMCA with Mexico and Canada, probably our two most and closest trading partners, most important and where the agriculture is integrated immensely between Canada, US, and Mexico. So I think that's an example where, it's been a little rocky with this and that and the back and forth, but the base reality is that the relationship's very, very strong. And I think that's the case with a lot, especially with these markets where we have existing FTAs.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Check out our full lineup of Successful Farming podcasts. The Successful Farming podcast goes in-depth into the topics that affect farmers and ranchers. The 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast offers a quick conversation between an editor and a farmer. The SF Shorts podcast offers bite-sized interviews about agricultural topics. And the SF Daily podcast covers commodity markets, weather, and the big things happening in agriculture each morning. Search for Successful Farming wherever you download your podcasts.
Welcome back. The U.S. harvested a record corn crop this fall. We asked Growth Energy CEO Emily Score if the record harvest could put pressure on the administration and lawmakers to take action on biofuel policy.
I certainly hope so, and that is a big part of the conversation in Washington with policymakers and lawmakers right now, is making sure that they are well aware that the state of the farm economy is such that we need U.S. markets for U.S. commodities, and higher blends of bioethanol like E15 are the solution. So a lot of attention educating. The Department of Agriculture has been a good champion for us in their conversations as well. And so I am optimistic that this will be recognized with Congress passing legislation and with some final rules coming out of the EPA on biofuel blending next year.
Yeah, and Farm Country has long been pushing for year-round E15, and given the supply and economic conditions in Farm Country right now, I mean, could this finally be the year that it really happens?
It could be, and it might now be early January. Because the government shutdown, it has slowed down a few things. What we need is a vehicle. We need a bill that's going to pass, and that's going to be one around government funding. The next opportunity is most likely going to be end of January, and so we're working very hard to make sure that leadership in the House and the Senate, with Republicans and Democrats, they're very aware. And it's really two things. We need markets for U.S. farmers, and with this huge corn crop that we have, we also need to make sure that we're attentive to consumer prices. And so the fact that E15 is a lower cost fuel, you save 10 to 30 cents per gallon every time you fill up, that is also very salient right now for lawmakers.
And as we look at this issue, the American Petroleum Institute, one of the most influential voices in the oil lobby, recently removed their support for year-round E15 for that bill. What would it take to bring back their support? Or do you think that the bill, if is in Congress, it could happen without their support?
I'll be optimistic that we can get them back there. And their opposition isn't on the merits. This is actually something that I think would be good for the refining sector. They will be able to blend more biofuel and generate more credits under the renewable fuel standard. This is a political act. This is something that they know is important to us. They have some things that are priorities for them, and so it's become kind of, they're resurrecting more of a political conversation, and there's a lot of good dialogue right now with API, with our congressional champions, and even with the White House as well. So I think what's top of mind is there's some API concerns, but I go back to the overriding concern right now. It's the farm economy and it's consumer prices. And for that, you will need E15.
Yeah, and renewable volume obligations have also been top of mind. I'm curious, what conversations have you had with the Environmental Protection Agency on those, and what are you hoping to see?
Ongoing conversation. Earlier this year, EPA came out with a fantastic proposal to blend more biofuel than ever before in 2026 and 2027. We need them to finalize this rule. They likely won't do it until maybe early 2026. And there's a lot of conversation of different stakeholder groups challenging the proposal, but their proposal is solid. It's more blending. It's preferential treatment for U.S. feedstock and U.S. fuel, and that's what you want out of U.S. law. And the other thing that you're seeing out of the agency is they are granting small refinery exemptions. That is something this administration is doing. But importantly for us, they are signaling when we do that, that's not going to come at the cost of biofuel demand. We will make sure that those numbers, those volume targets, will be blended. And that's a big part of the conversation on reallocating those requirements.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down. And without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Join us as we celebrate three decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions. Connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
Successful Farming presents the 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast. In each episode, a successful farming editor has a quick conversation with a farmer, chock full of stories and advice from their area of agriculture. They're interesting, educational, and perfect for your busy schedule. Search for 15 Minutes with a Farmer wherever you download your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Looking ahead, next week is Thanksgiving. Tune in next week and check our website anytime for the latest developments in all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.